Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
Well, I tend to think of the Gosling as a poem. The critical opening phrase of this poem will always be the grip, which the hands unite to form a single unit. Slowly and slowly, the club head is led back, pulled into position not by the hands, but by the body, which turns away from the target, shifting weight to the right side without shifting balance. Tempo is everything, perfection unattainable. As the body coils now to the top of the swing, there's a slight hesitation, a little nod to the gods. Now the weight begins shifting back to the left, pulled by the powers inside the earth. It's alive, this swing, a living sculpture, and down through contact, always down, striking the ball crisply, with character. There was only one other acceptable theory about how to hit a golf ball.
Oh, boy. Well, what's the other theory?
Grip it and rip it.
This is the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy. Brought to you by Wedgewood Pines, Core Golf, Mass Golf, Freedom Boat Club, and FN3P Golf. Now, Hardy.
Welcome into the Sports Hub Golf Club, where at some point this morning we will talk about golf. But it is impossible to think that we could start this show today without talking about what happened last night in Miami, with the Celtics winning Game 6 in the most dramatic of fashions, short of it going to overtime, which I think we all would have been happy with, Celtics fans anyway, after the way the game got away from them at the end. There's a lot to unpack here, so let's just jump right into it here. Celtics win 104-103. They force a Game 7. That'll be Monday night at TD Garden. If you were unable to watch last night and you're trying to make sense of what happened, let me explain. No, there's too much. Let me sum up. This is a game that was, A, for the most part, very ugly. The third quarter was just an absolute abomination on both sides. It was just gross. But to start the game, the Celtics jump out to a let's just call it a five-point lead there in the first quarter, because that's what it was. 34-29, Celtics look like they are on their way to establishing themselves and to, working toward a real chance at forcing a Game 7. Miami came back a bit in the second. It was lower scoring, and with a one-point edge in the second quarter, the Celtics went into the locker room at halftime with a four-point lead. Okay. It was 57-53 at half, I believe. The third quarter was just a lot of back and forth, a lot of stoppages, a lot of fouls, a lot of missed shots, a lot of referees reviewing things back and forth. It was just gross. Just no flow, no rhythm. A total of 41 points scored in the third quarter, but the Celtics edged out Miami in the third quarter, and they had a seven-point lead to begin the fourth quarter and increased that lead with about 4 minutes left last night. And if you're a Celtics fan, you're feeling pretty good. Once you get below 5 minutes and you're up 9 points, after Marcus Smart made a layup, it was 97-88, 4:56 left on the clock. The lead increased to 10 when the only guy who was really doing much offensively, Marcus Smart, in addition to Duncan Robinson, more on him in a moment, the only thing doing anything offensively for the Celtics, Marcus Smart, gave them a 10-point lead. And again, you have to be feeling pretty good. And it stayed that way. There was no scoring for the next almost minute of play. And at the 3:51 mark, Celtics are up 10. Fantastic. Jimmy Butler, who was also largely quiet, Ended up making a couple of free throws, and they start nibbling away at the lead. And next thing you know, it's a 5-point Celtics margin and then a 4-point Celtics margin. And the Celtics could not make a field goal. They could not. And I'm not saying they couldn't buy a basket. Their offense was just not flowing, non-existent. They were not doing anything down the stretch. And to make matters worse, with a 2-point lead, with 3 seconds left on the clock, Al Horford fouled Jimmy Butler in what was originally called a 2-point shot. Celtics, I thought, had originally called for a review. The refs, I believe, then took it upon themselves to review the call of the foul on Jimmy Butler, saying like, oh, okay, he was shooting a two, he's going to go to the line, they have a chance to tie the game. Once they looked at it and said, oh no, he was behind the line, he's going to get 3 free throws. Jimmy Butler made all 3. So it goes from 102-100 to all of a sudden the Miami Heat having a 103-102 lead with 3 seconds left. Celtics call the full timeout and inbound the ball in the Miami end. So they're on the business end of scoring on the business side of the court. Down a point with 3 seconds left. Derek White inbounds the ball to Marcus Smart, who immediately jacks up a 27-foot 3-point attempt, clangs off the rim. Derek White sneaks around down the baseline, grabs the rebound, and with 0.1 seconds left on the clock, releases the ball. It kisses the glass as time expires. And Ryan, I think you have Sean Grandy's call of the final shot. Grandy, pretty much everybody thought the shot did not get off in time. Here's how it sounded last night on the BetMGM Celtics radio network.
The moment we'll be replaying over and over and over again. It's in the hands of Derek White. Here we go. Into Smart. Smart turns. Faces 3. Rims out. It was tapped up and in, but it didn't come too late. We don't know anything yet. Of course we don't. Of course we get to 000s and don't have the answer. The ball was tapped up and in, but was it too late? Game 6 and the Eastern Conference Championship is going to be decided at the scorer's table. All eyes are on Zach Zorba at the scorer's table because he holds the information in his hand right now.
Confirmed. Good basket.
It is over. And the Boston Celtics have boldly and impossibly gone where no NBA team has gone before. The Eastern Conference title that was taken from them on this floor in Game 7 a year ago was a fingertip from their grasp. But those fingertips belong to Derek White, who makes his place in Celtics history and NBA history with the putback of a lifetime. The final score in Game 6, Boston 104, Miami 103.
There you go. So that's how things end last night in Miami with the Celtics getting the win thanks to Derek White and force a Game 7, which will take place tomorrow night at TD Garden. Celtics trying to do, I don't know if you've heard this yet, what has never been done before. Has this been mentioned at all? That no NBA team has ever been down 3-0 in a series and come back to win that series? I don't know if anybody is aware of that particular anomaly in NBA playoff history. Yeah, we all know. It's never been done. Celtics down 3-0 in the series have now forced a Game 7 at home tomorrow night at TD Garden. I mean, we're going to be talking about this game a lot for the rest of the day on the Sports Hub. I just want to mention a couple of things. As Jason Tatum said that after the game, he said, oh my God, that was incredible. We drew up a play. I was trying to get the ball. Jimmy and Strus jumped out to me. Smart came in and shot it, and we just crashed the glass. Everything was like a blur after that. D. White tipped it in, but it felt like the longest 10 seconds ever waiting for the confirmation if he made it or not. having said that, every other player on the court seemed to know that the shot was good. White knew it was good. Horford knew it was good. Marcus knew it was good. They were celebrating it like they knew. And I think that's kind of like indicative of what happened with Tatum last night, because he just kind of disappeared. And if I told you ahead of that game that, well, the Celtics were in an elimination game in Miami and Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown were 0 for 12 from three-point territory, and Tatum, while he had a very impressive first half, scored his first field goal of the second half about midway through the fourth, and other than going to the free throw line, that's all he would contribute offensively, what would you think? Well, what did everyone else do for three-point shooting? Oh, Grant Williams, he was 0 for 3. Oh, Horford, did he get hot? No, he was 0 for 2. Let me count these up here for a second. Let's see, that's 10, 14, 17. So Tatum, Horford, Jaylen Brown, and Grant Williams, 0 for 17 shooting from three-point territory. Would you think the Celtics won that game? Of course not. But Marcus Smart, 21 points. And by the way, Tatum still managed to get 31. He was an absolutely perfect 15 for 15 from the free throw line. Needed every single one of them. Call it clutch or not. Yeah, there are clutch elements to his game, but he, along with a few of his other teammates, could not find the basket at all from three-point territory last night. But Marcus Smart could, and Derek White found himself in a position to win that game underneath the glass with 0.1 seconds left on the clock, and that's what got it done. To say they're winning in different ways, I don't know if they're not quite like the Bruins of the regular season who found, different ways to win. That is one of those questions. That is one of those games where you say, I don't know how they won that game. Jaylen Brown came on the set with the TNT guys last night with Shaquille O'Neal and Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith and all those guys. And one of them said to him, he said, during a championship run, you're going to win games that you shouldn't win. And that was one of those games last night. And Jaylen Brown fully conceded, yeah, we had no business winning that game. But they did, and now there's a Game 7 at the Garden tomorrow night. Oh, hey, how about a guy who shouldn't win and managed to pull something off anyway? Oh, who are you talking about, Hardy? Brooks Koepka? No, I was going to mention my match last Sunday against my friend Rob Churchill and his father. I'll spare you that story. It's a pretty good putting story, though, and it does put a nice initial bow on my putter saga for the week. I don't know if I'll mention that or not. Instead, we will talk about the PGA Championship from last weekend, including your winner, Brooks Koepka, including the guy who was the story of the week, Michael Block, and what has happened to him since then. What's happening this week in golf, as there are a couple of tournaments going on in addition to the Charles Schwab Challenge. There's a couple of cool things happening in golf this week. So we'll get to all of it as we actually talk about golf on the Sports Hub Golf Club starting next here on 98.5 The Sport.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape.
And a wrench.
And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape.
Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
Now, with the tips that keep you swinging, it's the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on the Sports Hub.
All right. That was a late one last night.
I have to say, though, I was happy for the win because if you're anything like me, you stay up later after losses. But it was still late. I mean, the game went forever. That third quarter took forever. And then I knew I had to get up early for the Sports Hub Golf Club. But had it been a loss, I would have been up even later, just like laying there like, I don't know, stewing about what? Just stewing. But there was no stewing. There was no Jay stewing. There was no stewing of any kind. I just, drifted off to sleep and, got a tidy 5.5 hours and good to go. Good to go for the rest of the day. Let's see what's going on the leaderboard there at the Charles Schwab. Adam Schenck and Harry Hall are both 10 under par. They share the top spot on the leaderboard. They're going to tee off at 150 this afternoon. Harris English, one stroke off the lead. A bunch of players within striking distance today. But this Adam Schenck has really got his game dialed in with rounds of 66, 67, and 67. So while it's, of course, possible that he does come back to the field a little bit, I wouldn't count on it because he's been consistent. Harry Hall, on the other hand, shot an opening round 62 and then backed it up with a 66, which is still very good, but then shot a 72 yesterday. So who knows what's going to happen with him. Harris English has been going the wrong way up the leaderboard with rounds of 65, 66, and 70. So some of these guys, like Justin Suh, who played very well in the PGA Championship last week at times, has been bouncing back and forth. He had the round of the day yesterday to put himself within striking distance with a 66. Same with Victor Hovland, who we saw a lot at the PGA Championship last week, and he's within five shots of the lead after his 66 yesterday. So we'll see what goes on later today. I mean, the Charles Schwab, it's at the Colonial there in Fort Worth. So it's a nice enough golf course to watch these guys play on. I wouldn't call it must-watch television, but it's still something that you find yourself peeking in on, perhaps more than anything. I guess the knock on the leaderboard this week is that it doesn't have a lot of impressive names on it. Adam Schenck, Harry Hall. Even guys like Harris English and Griot and Hovland, who we know as golfers, not well known outside of golf. And let's face it, not even well known, all that well known inside of golf when you're talking about, Schenck and Harry Hall. The counter to that from the LIV people would be, well, look at our leaderboard. These are the best players in the world that we're paying all this money to. Well, at the LIV Golf Invitational in D.C., where they will play their third and final round today, and three-round tournaments out there, the choking dog that is Mito Pereira, come on. In any other sport, we would call him the same thing. And he seems like a nice enough guy. If you watch the Netflix Full Swing, he really does seem like a good dude. But holy crap, how can you forget what happened at the PGA Championship last year with that final swing on the 72nd hole when he sent driver trickling into the crick and ended up missing out on the playoff and Justin Thomas went on to win? I mean, holy God. Well, he is your leader at 9 under par. And a guy that I really, really like, Harold Varner III, is one stroke off the lead at the LIV Golf Invitational DC. And when you're talking about guys who are not well known outside of golf, well, Mito Pereira might be, but for all the wrong reasons. And Harold Varner III, as much as he is loved and adored by golf fans and was on the PGA Tour, not exactly a household name. Kevin Na, who is not exactly a fan favorite anymore, he is two strokes off the lead. I'd say the biggest names near anywhere within close of the top of the leaderboard at LIV Golf today would be Henrik Stenson and Louis Oosthuizen. I mean, other guys within three strokes of the lead, Sebastian Munoz, Andy Ogletree. I mean,
if you're gonna goof on the Charles Schwab challenge, saying I wouldn't know Adam Schenck and Harry Hall if they came to my house to deliver a pizza, well, ditto for Andy Ogletree. I mean, this isn't exactly a guy who graces the cover of the sports pages every week. Oh, Cameron Smith, by the way, three strokes off the lead. Okay, Cam Smith, and he's, you know, I believe the most legit player out there on the LIV, but then you got guys like Bryson DeChambeau, who I thought had just, you know, due to injury and you know, tinkering and working on his game had all but gone away. Man, did he show up at the PGA last week. And back to the PGA from last week, let's really give credit where it's due, because the show that we did last week was before the final round of the PGA Championship. And I had said last week, I said, Brooks Koepka appears to have everything going on. And I found myself rooting for him, and I couldn't figure out why. And it wasn't that he came off as this, you know, sneaky, likable hero in the full swing series or anything we've learned about him. Like, nothing has changed with Brooks Koepka other than his game that seemed to have left him for a while has returned. And I just find the guy likable now. I found myself rooting for him. I like the way he plays. He's got all facets of the game, but he's not a finesse player, but he's not an absolute brute either. I mean, yeah, he can smash the ball, but he's got a great touch around the greens. He plays fast. He is not methodical and plotting his way and thinking of his way around the golf course. He is just a naturally gifted athlete. Yes, and golfers by nature of what they do are not necessarily athletes, but there are athletes who play golf, and Brooks Koepka is one of them. So I was happy to see him win at the PGA last week, and I was also happy to see Bryson DeChambeau and Victor Hovland in the hunt and making a run at things. And whether these guys are on the LIV or not, it doesn't affect me the way I thought, and I think a way a lot of us thought it would, by seeing the LIV guys mixed in with the PGA Tour guys at the majors. I want them to be in there at every one. I want the best player to win, and the best player won last week in Brooks Koepka. I mean, that ultimately, that's what it should be like, and not just for the Open Championship and the U.S. Open. No, the best players should have a shot at winning each and every week, which is why I think we like the idea of Michael Block qualifying and playing in the tournament last week and watching what he did. What has happened since then is both a little bit unfortunate and unfortunately somewhat predictable, and has caused a certain amount of backlash coming from both sides that I don't understand how people don't understand it. So to refresh your memory, Michael Block was the club professional last week at the PGA Championship who put together some really impressive rounds. And when I say impressive, he didn't go low any one day. He shot 73 straight days. And in his final round, Michael Block had a hole in one. And he also had an absolutely brilliant up and down on the final hole to get himself in a tie for 15th place, which automatically gains him entry into next year's PGA Championship. He also cashed a check for $288,333, which works out to about $2,150 an hour lessons that he teaches at his public golf course back in California. And that's where you can find him during the week, given lessons. He says, yeah, he pretty much teaches the people he wants to teach now, and he makes enough money, you know, as a club pro to where he doesn't have to be out on the lesson range for 8 hours a day, 5, 6, 7 days a week. But yeah, he is the life of not a professional golfer, but as a golf professional. That was the best way it was described on the telecast last week. Here's a guy who is not a pro golfer. He is a golf pro. But watching him play and watching him work his way around the course and with his old irons with the lead tape on him and all this stuff. This guy can just play. He can just play. Great. It's fun. And it was immediately invited to play in the Charles Schwab Challenge this week under a sponsor's exemption. Cool. Let's give a guy who is playing great golf a chance to play more great golf. You know, let's see how this works out. And I think everybody is pulling for Michael Block at this point. We talked about it on the Sports Hub last week and how cool a story it was. And the hole-in-one is crazy. But his reaction to all this stuff, I was buying into it. And I still buy into most of it, you know? Like, Beatle asked me, he's like, that was a put on when he said he didn't know if it went in. I'm like, no, I get it. You know, did that go in? The guy's 46 years old. I don't know. Maybe he can't see 180 yards anymore. Lord knows I have trouble seeing where the ball goes. And I'm only a few years older than him. So, I get it. He didn't see it. His reaction when he told he was going to be playing with Rory. Oh my God, look at this guy. He's so self-deprecating and effacing. Oh, wait a second. Hold up on that car wash, gentlemen, before you say self-deprecating. He was asked about playing with Rory last week. Ryan, do you have that by any chance?
I do, yeah.
Oh, okay. So here, Michael Block, given an interview after the PGA Championship, but before the Charles Schwab Challenge began, said this.
So what's the difference between his game on, you'd assume that Rory's a better golfer than you are?
He's a lot longer than I am. That's what it is.
Okay, so that the length is the big thing.
Oh, my God. What I would shoot from where Rory hits it would be stupid. I think I'd be one of the best players in the world.
How? Really?
Hands down. Oh, if I had that stupid length, all day. My iron game, wedge game, around the greens, and my putting is world class.
Oh, Michael. This is where it began. So I knew all this. So on Thursday, it was actually Friday, after the first round was complete, and I'm doing the updates on the midday show with Zolak and Bertrand. And I start laughing at what happened to Michael Block in the first round. Oh, the people give me a hard time. Can't believe the haters. You're a jerk, Hardy. Nah. And when I say so many people, there's like two people. I'm like, well, I don't know if you heard what he had to say.
World class.
About his game prior to that. But also, the world-class wedge player, let's just for fun. I don't want to do a whole segment on this, Ryan, so I'm going to go a little late here. Is that okay? You're all right with that? Okay. Because I don't want to devote an entire segment to what Michael Block did in the first round here, because then it really feels like and sounds like I'm piling on. And I'm not, but I just want to explain to you how this backlash happened. He's world class. He's he's the man. Okay. Yeah, hands down. If he just had that length. Okay, so he goes out on the first hole of his first hole of competition after saying that, and bogeys a par five. Okay, now let me explain to you. I bogey a par five. I would say 9 times out of 10, I will accept that score. These guys hate bogeying par fives like poison. They look at them as birdie holes, especially to start a golf tournament, and they don't want to make bogeys on par five. They certainly don't want to make bogeys on the next two holes to start a tournament, especially when they have self-described themselves as one of the best players in the world, that they just had Rory's length, especially when they reference their world-class wedge and putting game and they blade approaches with wedges from 40 yards out, which is exactly what Michael Block did. The guy goes out there and blows up in his friend. you know, this is his chance to prove to everybody he is the player he thought he was. Bogey, bogey, bogey. He makes a nifty two on the par 3 fourth, but then backs it up with another bogey. Birdies 9, makes the turn, makes a par on 10, and then goes bogey, bogey, bogey. Would you like to know how he finished his first round after he described himself as having world-class putting and wedge skills?
Oh, my
God. Double bogey, double bogey, bogey, double bogey. Three doubles on the scorecard. Three.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God is right. If I make three doubles, if you make three doubles, that's what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to beat. We're not supposed to tie for 15th at the PGA Championship and then go on a podcast and say how, oh, my God, if I could just hit it 40 yards longer. And believe me, the distance disparity between him and Rory is real. And as good as Michael Block, he's still very good. His driving distance at the PGA was just a tick under 280 yards. I mean, he's long off the tee. By my standards, 279-something. Here's the issue with Michael Block and what he doesn't either recognize about his own game or I don't know. That was such a weird moment from this guy who seemed to be like so, you know, in touch with his own game and his own, you know, the game. I mean, the guy is a golf professional. He understands how the game is played, right? Accuracy. Less than 50% driving accuracy. Oh, wait a second, Michael. It's not just about the distance. And by the way, metrics in golf have proven over the last few years, or at least shown. I don't want to say proven. You know, the old adage, drive for show, putt for dough, is not necessarily true. If you can hit the ball a long way, you are better off being in the first cut of rough 40 yards closer to the hole then you would be in the fairway 40 yards back, okay? Because, and again, you can get into your own explanations why, but for instance, if you are as strong as, say, Brooks Koepka, and you can drive the ball 310, but you're going to be in the rough, well, chances are you are also strong enough to muscle a wedge out of there and put it where you want to, and you know the strength and the skill and everything that it takes to drive the ball that far will also serve you even if you don't find the fairway. So drive for show, accuracy maybe not as important. However, if you're only going to hit it only like 280 yards isn't long, but PGA Tour standards it's not. I get it, fine. But if you're only going to hit it 280 yards, you better find the fairway, because if you are in the rough more often than not, which Michael Block was at the PGA Championship, you're not going to have all the requisite skills most likely to get on the green every time and hit greens in regulation and, more importantly, get it close so you can make birdie putts. And that's the issue with what he's saying. Maybe he would have been better off, I don't know, just saying, if I had the strength of these guys, then I would be one of the best players in the world, okay? Because that would kind of take the driving accuracy thing out of the equation, and he could make up for it. I don't know how you make up for blading wedges over the green and three-putting and everything else that you said that you were the best in the world at 2 days ago on a podcast, and then go out and shoot an 81 in the first round and finish with three doubles on the last four holes. And that's where the blowback came from Michael Block. It wasn't like he went out and shot 74 and people said, oh, he sucks after all, and they were just waiting for him to collapse. No, no, no. It was the fact that he went on and said, all I have to do is drive the ball further and I'd be one of the best players in the world. Like, Michael, when you say stuff like that, you sound like me.
All day.
All day. You sound like somebody who doesn't understand the game. And you understand the game. As well as any of these guys out there, certainly better than us. What are you doing? Don't do that. Don't say that. I still like the guy. I hope He's got another exemption coming up, and he's going to be in the PGA Championship presumably next year. His tie for 15th place assures him a spot there. But it was that hubris, huh? He said something about the golfing gods, the wrath of the golf gods. That's what it was. I'm not trying to do anything, he said, period. I'm just playing golf. That's what I know how to do. He said, I have no legs, meaning I think he was literally and figuratively tired. You know, four great rounds at Oak Hill, but no legs. No legs for, you know, this amount of golf and no legs for this amount of consecutive good golf. 11 of 28 fairways over the two rounds. Yes, of course, he missed the cut. Who just asked me? Yes, he missed the cut. Even when I hit it good, it would land over the bunker and bounce back in the left of the bunker where it shouldn't. I think I felt the wrath of the golf gods this week, which I get it. I completely get it, and I don't blame them for it because they gave me a lot of positive things last week. I'm not even surprised by it. I'm not surprised at all by my kicks and whatever else happens, my lies. It is what it is, and I'm moving on. So, the Michael Block story is not done. We're going to get more Michael Block here, and I hope he plays well down the stretch. I just hope he doesn't say if he just hit it longer, he'd be one of the best players in the world, because obviously there's a little more to the game than that. All right, what else is going on in golf? We'll find out as we continue the Sports Hub Golf Club coming up next.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape.
And a wrench. And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape.
Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
Face it, you'll never be the club pro.
But you'll be the cool kid on the links when you tell them you listen to the Sports Hub Golf Club with Hardy on the Sports Hub.
What do we have, Ryan? Nate in Bridgewater?
We do, yeah.
Yeah, let's get to him right now in the Sports Hub Golf Club. Nate, what's going on?
Howdy, how you doing, buddy?
Good, how you doing?
I'm good. I'm mowing greens. I got to be quick. But I want a quick comment on Koepka. I'm glad he won. You know, I mean, I'm a LIV supporter. I'm not a PGA, like, against guy. I'm a fan of a golf, period. But
yeah.
I'm glad he won because it kind of proves the fact that the majors need to have the best players in the world, period. Like, that's what makes the majors to me. I think that's what gives it the major feel. When you only have PGA players playing in them, it feels just like another PGA event.
Yeah.
But on did you see the video float around by chance of Koepka at the Florida Panthers game this week?
I did. I don't know what he was, what he had gotten into. A lot of people were
maybe a nose beer or two.
A lot of people said it reminded them maybe a little too close to home of somebody who had partaken in the booger sugar.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Let's just say he was enjoying his celebration post PGA Championship. Five major championships now, three of them PGAs. Whatever you want to go do, you go do it, Brooks.
Listen,
God bless.
Just like me and you, brother. I mean, we're both recovering addicts, dude. We can't judge. You have your fun, but keep it safe and keep it, you know, to a minimum. But my other question for you, because you had mentioned putting earlier. What kind of putter do you use? Are you a blade guy or are you a mallet guy?
Oh, you know what? God bless
because
you for asking.
Before you answer, because I'll hang up and listen, but the reason why I ask is I'd had a Scotty Cameron for years. I loved it and tried to kind of reform my swing to the putter as opposed to getting the putter that fits my stroke, and I just recently traded it in for a new Spider, and let me tell you, the ball is rolling in the cup, baby.
Okay.
I love
All right,
it.
Nate.
Love it.
Awesome. Awesome. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. All right. So here's two things on that. Number one, I've been a blade putter pretty much my whole life. Messed around with a mallet here or there, but, you know, from the Ping Answer 5, which I'm staring at right now. It's in the Callaway demo bag that that my buddy Steve Connolly got for me years ago. May he rest in peace. You know, the full-blown leather staff bag with my name on it, which I will never take out on a golf course anywhere. Are you kidding? You show up with a staff bag with your name on it, you better be really, really good or really, really bad. And while the latter sometimes applies, I don't want to be known for that as the guy who shows up with a staff bag. But I keep like my extra putters and a couple of, you know, like just memorabilia clubs in there. And I'm looking at three different blades right now. My Ping Answer 5, which is a face balanced putter. Okay. And I didn't know this when I bought that thing back in the 90s. But a face balanced putter, essentially, when you lay the shaft across two of your fingers, that sounds dirty. The blade of the putter will essentially be parallel to the ground. Okay. It is face balanced. There's no weight on the heel or toe. It'll be perfectly balanced so that the blade stays perpendicular to the ground. The blade actually faces up at the sky. Okay. And that is from what I learned through the putter fitting that I went through at Golfer's Warehouse a couple of weeks ago. That is designed for more straight back and straight through putting strokes. Now, arc putting strokes, which I think apply to most of us, are the arc kind of travels on a semicircle in front of you. You think you're going straight back and straight through, which on very short putts is what we try and do. But even then, there's a tiny bit of arc to it. There's a tiny bit of arc to most of our putting strokes. And that's where most putters fall. Most blade putters are still going to be toe weighted, but they are going to be weighted for people who have a stronger arc and a more severe arc back and through. And I've been a blade putter most of my life until I went through the putter fitting. And I ended up going with, like Nate just said, a Scotty Cameron. The brand new, they just went on the shelves here like a week or two ago. I went with a Fastback 1.5, which is a mallet putter, but as described by Mr. Cameron himself, has the feel, as you're playing with it, of a blade putter, but it's more forgiving. So if you're not hitting the absolute sweet spot of the putter every single time, it's going to give you a more uniform roll off the putter face and this milled design, and it gets the ball rolling and bop, 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 bop. Here's what I noticed about it. Number one, I went with a 35-inch putter, which seems like a little bit long, especially for somebody who plays standard length shafts, my irons. And by the way, don't get all hung up with how tall you are. It really has more to do with where your hands hang next to your body. Think about it. You know, you could be 6'2", but if you have long arms and your hands hang to about the same point in relation to the ground as mine do at 5'11", then you and I should be playing probably the same length clubs. Conversely, if you're 5'8", but you have short arms, and when you stand with your hands at your side, your fingertips are essentially the same distance off the ground as a guy who is 6 feet tall, then you should be playing the same length irons. It doesn't matter how tall you are. It's the distance from where your hands are and where the ground is. 35 inches for a putter is a little bit long, but I like a little bit more of an upright putting stroke. I don't know if it feels better on my back. I just feel like I see the line of the putt better. I don't get it over the ball with my putts as much as I probably should, whatever. So I went with the 35-inch, but also I've been using oversized grips on my putters now for years. The Super Stroke, you know, the big grips which are supposed to keep your hands out of it. The putters come from Scotty Cameron and all good putter manufacturers, pre-balanced, pre-weighted. They test these things. It's got a pretty much an old school pistol grip on it. And I've gone back to using the small putter grip on this new putter, and I love it. I love it. The first nine holes out I played with it, I did not make any putts of any real length, maybe 1 4-footer. But as soon as we made the turn, I made a long birdie putt on 10 at the Cape Club, which is a hell of a birdie hole for me. I think I've birdied that thing, let me see now, in the 4 years I've been playing it, once, one time, the par 4 10th. But I made it with my new putter. I'm like, oh, I like it. And I do. And then I played with it again. The next 18 that I played was a week ago today. I played with my buddy Rob and his dad. And we had a match that was, they were up. You know, we won the front up one. They were up two on the back. And we needed to do something special on 18. And I rolled in like a 15-foot birdie putt on 18 to have everything. No blood, have the entire match. Oh, it's all about the putter. Oh, okay, whatever. Hey, I think it is, okay? Believe me, I'm not sitting here giving myself any credit. I've convinced myself it's this new Scotty Cameron Fastback 1.5. I love it. So that's the long answer to your question. But the other thing I wanted to mention, as he said, with the LIV players and how, you know, we should see them in the major tournaments. Yeah. And for the most part, we have. The major tournaments since the LIV has come around, I think, have treated this the right way. Open Championship, U.S. Open. Hey, qualifying is based on qualifying, you know, and if you have an exemption or you qualify this way or that way, just because you play in the LIV doesn't change that. The Masters invited LIV guys. The PGA Championship, which a lot of people, myself included, I had to, you know, be reminded. Now, the PGA Championship is not run by the PGA Tour. They are two separate things. So the PGA Championship can invite whoever they want. And they invited all the LIV players, and I think that's how it should be going forward. And quite frankly, I think it should be that way with the Ryder Cup, too. I think the LIV guys should be involved in the Ryder Cup. I don't know how that's going to work out, and we're going to see that kind of develop and unfold. But all right, that's it for this week's Sports Hub Golf Club. Thank you for allowing me to talk Celtics for the first few minutes of it, because they are the story of the day, and we're going to hear a lot more on the Celtics from all the shows later on today. And, of course, tomorrow here, Memorial Day on the Sports Hub Golf Club, and leading into Game 7 tomorrow night. By the way, quickly, just want to mention, Mass Golf's TV show is back again this year. First episode has already started airing on NESN. It's going to be on again on Wednesday, Thursday, and Sunday, so you can find it on your DVR, record it. Full list of airings can be found on the Mass Golf website, massgolf.org. Thanks again for listening. Ryan Beaton, thank you, sir. Talk to you next week at this time on the Sports Hub Golf Club.
Thanks for listening to the Sports Hub Golf Club on Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Be honest, wouldn't you like to play more golf this year? As the State Golf Association for Massachusetts, Mass Golf is ready to help, and they want you to become a member. By joining, you'll automatically get a handicap index from the USGA, access to play exclusive private clubs through Mass Golf events, and a bundle of additional benefits. Best of all, it costs just $55 to join. Visit massgolf.org and make today a golf day.
Roto-Rooter.
Plumbing problem? Leaks are no match for DIY duct tape.
And a wrench.
And a towel, more duct tape, a hammer, this random tube I found in the basement, another bucket, more tape, a little more tape.
Perfect.
Maybe leave plumbing to the pros at Roto-Rooter.
Roto-Rooter.
This is Bob Soucy. The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon. As a runner myself representing the Flutie Foundation at the 2022 Boston Marathon, I'm proud to have been a teammate to many amazing Adaptive Program runners, achieving their dreams at the greatest race in the world. The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit Flutie Foundation.org to get involved.